Rishus HaRabbanim, Rishus HaVimori. Good morning and welcome. Allow me to begin by thanking our host, Yeshiva University and its Center for the Jewish Future, as well as the Arbisfeld family for sponsoring this morning's program, and to thank all of you for coming today. Chazal observed that Aharon, and not Moshe, was commanded to prompt the first three Makos in Mitzrayim. It was Aharon who, with his staff, symbolically struck the Nile to initiate Dam and Tzvardeya. And it was again he, and not Moshe, who struck the sand, bringing the Kenim. The Medrash explains that, as we will read in this week's Parsha, Moshe's life had been saved when, as a baby, he was placed in a basket on the Nile. So striking the same body of water that benefited him would exhibit ingratitude. Similarly, Moshe could not strike the sand to initiate the Makkah of Kenim. After all, it was the sand that had aided him, that had concealed the Egyptian he had killed many years earlier, as we also will read in this week's parasha. Even towards these inanimate benefactors, water and sand, Moshe showed respectful gratitude. Rashi, in our first two sources, is based on these comments of the Medrash. And more, El Aharon, source 1, it was Aharon who had to initiate the Makkah. L'fisha hegen hayor al Moshe kishenishlach l'socho, l'fichach lo lokal yado lo bedam v'lo betzvardim v'lo kal yaday Aharon. It was Aharon who had to do it. And similarly, in regard to the third Makkah, in source number 2, again, Emor El Aharon, lo haya ha'ofer kedai lilkos ayyidei Moshe. It was not appropriate that Moshe should be the one to strike the sands. L'fisha hegen alav kishaharages ha'mitzri v'yitmeneu b'chol v'loka al yedei Aharon once again. It's interesting that this is not the only time that Chazal set Moshe Rabbeinu as an example for Hakaras HaTov. Later in Parshas Matos, Moshe is commanded to take vengeance against the Midianim, yet he sends others to fulfill the mitzvah, refraining from taking a personal role in this battle. Why? Shenizgadel b'Midian, the Medrash tells us. Moshe himself lived in Midian. Literally, he was raised in Midian. How can I cause harm, l'misha asu litova, Moshe felt. The Midianim, of course, were going to be attacked, were going to be annihilated anyway, but he could not be the one to do it. He owed this Midianite people, albeit this wicked people, a debt of gratitude. Study of thankfulness and gratitude, the theme that emerges from these accounts of Moshe and Aharon in Sefer Shemos, has recently exploded with the new field of positive psychology. Now, when first hearing this term, positive psychology, many asked me, what, was your field formerly about negative psychology? And in a sense, the answer is yes. Psychology, entrenched in what's been called the disease model, had long focused almost exclusively on human weakness and frailty. How could we make a depressed patient, an anxious patient, less depressed, less anxious? For generations, we psychologists were absorbed with uncovering the causes of, the best treatment methods for, mental illness, pathology. By contrast, positive psychology, which has flourished in recent years, focuses on the opposite: human strengths, health and wellness, life fulfillment. If someone is depressed, we don't only seek to make him undepressed. We also ask, how can we make him happy? Or even if someone was never particularly troubled to begin with, how could we help even the well to become happier, more productive people, to lead more meaningful lives? Breaking through the zero point is what they call it. If the old focus was on bringing the sick from a negative 10, if you will, back to zero, the supposed baseline, now we want to figure out how to bring even the relatively healthy from zero up to a positive 10. A simple idea in hindsight, yet in a sense a radical one, a revolutionary one that has taken the field by storm. Rather than exclusive focus on problems, on symptoms, on dysfunction, we ask, what are human virtues? What are our character strengths? And how do these strengths contribute to health and well-being, to optimal function? And it isn't only descriptive, it's also practical. How do we harness human assets in order to enrich our lives, to encourage our families, our communities to thrive? Positive psychology is a cutting-edge area of study today. Widespread interest in positive psychology makes it the topic of some of the most popular university courses. There's similarly been an explosion of books, journal articles, conferences, all in the last decade or two. My own research in this area has focused on positive psychology as it relates to Yiddishkeit, to our Sifrei Kodesh. The 24 character strengths that positive psychologists claim define human virtue, I believe, are evident in our Masorah, in the tapestry and texts of our tradition. Of course, an exhaustive examination of all 24, of the entire positive psychology classification system through the lens of Jewish religious texts in a single presentation is obviously impossible. So I thought that this morning we might focus on the character strength that we learn from Moshe, the way he responds in Parshas Va'era to the events recorded about him in this week's Parshas Shemos, the Hakaras HaTov we just discussed. In fact, gratitude is one of the 24 strengths that positive psychologists most avidly investigate. I'll attempt to demonstrate that Hakaras HaTov is not merely an example of something our tradition values, but is a cardinal and primary virtue from the perspective of our Masorah. Then we will briefly survey some of the research on the health benefits those who are Makir Tov may look forward to. And finally, we'll discuss practical approaches, tried and true tested methods for bringing more Hakaras HaTov into our own lives. We begin our discussion with a twist on the age-old question, who is a Jew? The very words Jew, Judaism, have their etymological source in the name of Yaakov's and Leah's son Yehuda, Judah, whose name in turn stems from the Hebrew root meaning thank and praise, as we see from source 3. Vataharod vateled bein vatomer hapa'am ode es Hashem al kein kara shemo Yehuda. But Yehuda is not merely one of the many Shiftei Ka, nor even merely ancestor of kings. As is explicit from the Medrash, Yehuda is the namesake of the Jewish people. Let's see the next source from Bereishis Rabbah based on a pasuk we just learned yesterday. Yehuda ata yoducha achecha. Achecha nekroin al shemecha. Ein adam omer ruveniana, shimoniana, ela yehudiana. Interestingly, the Gemara further tells us that from the time Hashem created the world, nobody thanked Hashem until Leah did for her fourth son, Yehuda. As the Gemara in Brachos tells us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, source number 5, Miyom Shebora HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es Olamo, Lo Haya Adam Shehoda LaKadosh Baruch Hu Ad Shebasa Leah V'Hodaso, Shenemar HaPam Odes Hashem. She was the first. The first to thank Hashem. Now, assuming the Gemara is not to be taken in its most simplistic sense, after all, others, including Avos and Imahos, surely thanked Hashem prior to Leah, we must ask, in what way was Leah's thanks categorically different from that which preceded hers? When Chazal say that Leah was the first to thank Hashem, they must mean there was something unique in her thankfulness. Let us turn to a very interesting medrash, source number 6. Rebrechim Mishum B'Shem Rabbi Levi L'Kohen Sheyored L'Gorin Nosan Lo Echad Kor Shal Meiser V'Lo Hechzik Lo Tova V'Echad Nosan Lo Kometz Shal Chulin V'Hechzik Lo Tova. Of course, you're probably wondering, since when does a Kohen collect Meiser? The Mepharshim explained that this refers to the time. I'm sorry?
The Knas of Ezra.
Correct, the Knas of Ezra. This refers to the time in the second Beis HaMikdash, Shivas Tzion, when Klal Yisrael were invited, were encouraged, were charged with returning to Eretz Yisrael, and the Levium were not as forthcoming as they should have been. So there was a Knas that Kohanim, too, now would collect Meiser. So this Kohen received a kor of Meiser, but he didn't express thankfulness to that individual, but someone else gave him a kometz, just a little bit of chulin, and he was thankful. Omar le Adoni HaKohen, ani nosati lecha kor, v'zeh lo nosan lecha el kometz, v'yata machzik lo tova. You're thanking him After all, I gave you so much more than he did. Why not thank me? Amar le'at michel kinos atali. Avol zeh no sein li mishalo lefichach ani machzik lo tova. So in other words, the Medrash is offering us a mashal, a parable about a Kohen who was more thankful for a small voluntary gift he received than for a larger one given him in the context of Meiser. Meiser, after all, the Kohen rationalized under the current circumstances, was a gift that is due him, as all Jews were then obligated to give their Meiser to a Kohen. So of that larger Meiser gift, he thought, it's coming to me anyway. Magiali. Es ist kommt mir. Right? In every language there's a way to say it. But for the smaller, voluntary, non-Meiser gift, he felt pure gratitude. He realized it was above and beyond what he deserved. As we continue reading there in source number 6, the end of the second to last line, Kach lefi shahayu imahos sevuros shezum amedes shlosha vizum amedes shlosha v'kivan shiyolda leya ben dalet amra hapam odes Hashem. The nimshal, in other words, the parable's meaning, the Medrash makes clear, Leah, in bearing a fourth son, had now been granted more than her equal share as one-fourth of the Imahos, collectively destined to mother a total of 12 tribes. Once she received more than her share, once she recognized she was granted something above and beyond her due, she experienced the truest gratitude. The Medrash there continues that in selecting Yehuda's name as she did, Leah thereby set a precedent for her future descendants to express their own thankfulness to Hashem. The Medrash elaborates that Leah's descendants, including David and Daniel, were known for their praise of Hashem. For example, the following several sources, source number 7, perhaps the most well-known, and this is the one that the Medrash cites in reference to David HaMelech, Hodu Hashem Ki Tov Ki Li'olam Chasdo. And when we look at the next three sources, all of which come from Sefer Tehillim, primarily attributed to David HaMelech, O Hashem Mechalibi, Asapra Kol Niflosecha, Lamani Zamecha Chavod V'lo Yidom, Hashem Elokai Liolam Odeka, Mo Ashiv L'Hashem Kol Tagmulohi Alai, all of these expressions of grateful thankfulness. As we've now seen, though, Yehuda, the namesake of the Jews, his name doesn't just commemorate an example of thanksgiving, but rather the example of thanksgiving. Leah's was the first, the ultimate, as we've explained, the purest example of gratitude, and for this we are named. We, as her biological and spiritual descendants, realize that the very identity, the very essence of being called a Jew, is about gratitude. Further, one of the Aseres Hadibros, the fifth of the Ten Commandments, to honor father and mother is based on gratitude. As the Sefer Achinuch states, take a look at source 11, Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, Mitzvah Skibet Av Ve'Eim. Mishar Shei Mitzvah Zu, Sheroi Lo La'adam Sheyakir V'Yigbo Chesed, L'Misha Asa Imo Tova, V'Lo Yeh Novo L'Misnakir V'Kofui Tova. At the root of this mitzvah lies the thought that it's fitting for a man to acknowledge and treat with loving kindness the person who treated him with goodness. Ha'av v'ha'ein, continuing in source 11, heim sibas heyosa ba'olam, v'al kein be'emes roilo lasos lehem kol kavod v'chol to'elos sheyuchol, ki heim heviyuhu li'olam, gam yagiu bo kama yagios bekatnuso. It's proper for him to give his parents every honor and every benefit that he can, since they brought him into the world and then, too, labored through many troubles over him in his early years. And if that was written in the 13th century, here's a modern version by a distinguished professor that appeared in a psychology journal. If I am grateful to my parents for feeding me, changing my diapers, introducing me to God, holding me when I was afraid, comforting me when I was distraught, and housing and educating me for 20 or more years, then I acknowledge gladly that there's no way I can give back to them in the measure that they've given me. I gladly admit that my debt is unrepayable. Interestingly, honoring parents is the only one of the Aseres Hadibros and one of the very few mitzvos overall for which the Torah mentions the extraordinary reward of arichas yamim, of long life. In sources 12 and 13, of course, kabed es avicha v'yasimecha leman yarichun yamecha, it appears, as you know, again in Devarim, number 13, Kabir Savicha Vyasimecha Kashir Tsiv Hashem Lokecha, again, Lama'an Yarichun Yamecha. Also, interestingly, this mitzvah, the essence of this mitzvah, is repeated in different form again and again elsewhere in Tanakh. For example, source 14, Arur Makla Aviv V'Imo, Amar Kalam Amein, and as well in Mishlei, Shema Avicha Zeh Yiladecha, V'Al Tavuz Ki Zakna Imecha. As the Sefer HaChinuch further explains, this mitzvah is critical, in that once one recognizes his parents for all they've done to bring him into the world and provide for him, he'll come to recognize Hashem, who is ultimately responsible for creating and benefiting him and all of mankind. In sum, we learn the primacy of Kibud Horim that is, in fact, founded upon gratitude. And moreover, we see that this gratitude-based mitzvah is a foundational one, leading to recognition not only of parents, but of Hashem himself. The Karban Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, is another mitzvah whose roots are embedded in Hakaras HaTov. Source 16 simply refers you to the Pasuk, for which we know that there is a Karban Todah, and it was presented in the Beis HaMikdash by survivors of peril, including an ocean or desert voyage, severe illness or incarceration, as the Gemara tells us, Brachos, Source 17, Omer Yudah Marav, Arba'a Tzrichin Lahodos, Yor De Hayam, Holchei Midbaros, Umisha Hayacholim and Isrape, Umisha Hayachavosh Beves HaAsurim V'yotza. And some say it was offered as well by joyous celebrants, such as bride or groom on the wedding day. Source 18, Rabbeinu Bachya. On the one hand, he mentions Karban Toda Baal HaNes, Lashon Hodah, for example, Cholav and Isrape may be Karban Toda. But in the second line, the middle, Oshar Samachos, Kigon Simchas Chasan V'Kala. And he brings the pasuk in Yirmiyah there, Kol Sason V'Kol Simcha Mavi and Toda Beis Hashem as a supporting source. Now this Karban is a pure expression of gratitude to Hashem. And Tanakh seems to offer several supporting examples. When Yonah is saved from a stormy ocean voyage, what does he say? Source 19, V'ani b'kol toda ezbechalach, with thanksgiving I'll bring sacrifices to you, Hashem, presumably a Karban Toda. Let's not forget someone else who was saved from a stormy sea, Noach. Source 20, upon exiting the Teva, V'ayiven Noach mizbeach, V'ya'al olos b'mizbeach. And as you know, the Toda is practiced in modified form even today in the context of the Birchas HaGomel, recited in circumstances that would have once required a Karban of Thanksgiving. With permission, can we hold questions?
I just wanted to ask if you could translate
in context, but I'll try to give a more literal translation if that's what you're getting at. Absolutely. According to the Medrash, fascinatingly, the Toda will be the only offering brought in the eventual Messianic age, a fact that may underscore the eternal, the everlasting importance of displaying gratitude. So let's turn then to source 21, Rabbi Pinchas, Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Yochanan, B'Shem, Rabbi Nachum de Galia. Rabbi Pinchas, Rabbi Levi, and Rabbi Yochanan are speaking in the name of Rabbi Nachum who is from the Galia. La'asid lavo. Eventually, in the end of time, the Messianic age, kol ha-karbanos b'teilin, all offerings will be nullified, no longer offered, in other words, v'karban toda eino batel. The only offering that will continue, b'yamos ha-mashiach then, that will not be batel, is the toda. Once again, gratitude is not merely one of our values, but rather it is central and cardinal. Similarly, there is mizmor l'soda, which we recite in Shacharis most mornings, today being a perfect example. The Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch writes, turn to source 22, Mizmor Lasoda, first he mentions the minig that some had, Yesh La'omra Benegina, to sing it with tune. Shekol Hashiros Asidos Libatel, all song will eventually be irrelevant or nullified, Chutz mi Mizmor Lasoda. Of all mizmorim, of all songs, only this one, quite literally this psalm of thanksgiving, only this mizmor will be sung then, la'asid lavo, in those days. Another mitzvah whose core theme is based on expression of gratitude is the obligation to offer bikurim, the first fruits. And as we'll see, it too is a mitzvah that is more basic and fundamental than we might have realized. In other words, in going through these sources, we're not merely listing particular mitzvos relevant to Akara Satov, but in other words, emphasizing how each of them is actually foundational in ways we might not have realized. Source 23, V'lakachta mereshis kal priyo adama, one was to bring from the first fruits of his produce, asher tavi mi'artzecha, that he would bring from the land, asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach, from the God-given land, v'samta batena, and bring it in a basket, v'halachta el ha-makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha l'shaken shemosham. Jews traveled to Yerushalayim and donated to the Kohanim the initial produce of their annual harvest at the Beis HaMikdash. This contribution was accompanied by a declaration of gratitude. In addition to expressing gratitude to Hashem for the first of the fruits themselves, the declaration recalls the miraculous Geulas Mitzrayim that he orchestrated. Let's take a look at Source 24. Vayotzienu Hashem miMitzrayim biyad chazaka uvizroin etuya uvimora gadol uvosos uvimosim. God redeemed us from Egypt with a mighty outstretched hand of awesome wonders. Vayivienu el amakom hazeh vayiten lanu es haaretz hazos eretz zavas chalav uvidvash. The pilgrim rejoices that Hashem gave him this land of Israel, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I brought the first fruits that you've given me. And he will leave them there before God, prostrate in thanksgiving. So mitzvahs bikurim promotes the expression of gratitude for abundant divine goodness, both current and past. But many of you are familiar, and this will be our punchline, with the medrash that elucidates the opening phrase of the Torah, Bereshis bara Elokim. Bereshis, the world was created for Reshis, for the first. One explanation of the medrash is that Reshis, first, refers to the first fruits. Hashem created the world, in other words, Bereshis bara Elokim, Hashem created the world for the first fruits that Jews would donate, the Bikurim his people would one day bring. At first glance, it seems odd. The whole world was created for Bikurim. But to us, it should now make perfect sense. Bikurim, as we explained, is a mitzvah that is born of gratitude. More than just another useful trait among many, gratitude is a core virtue. The Medrash confirms this. For on account of the gratitude to Hashem that we would eventually express, was the entire world created. Aside from the contexts of these mitzvos, Chazal chose to frequently emphasize Hakara Satov as a running theme in Agadic interpretations throughout the Torah. Let's survey a few brief examples, a whirlwind tour, if you will, drawn from Parshios read this time of year, and we'll start literally from the beginning. When Hashem questioned Adam regarding his eating from the Eitz Hadas in disobedience of his command, Adam blamed Chava for instigating the sin. Source 25. The Gemara in context is speaking of the Jews who in the Midbar complained of the man. They complained of the man that God gave them miraculously from heaven. Ungrateful. So the Gemara refers to them as B'nei Kefuye Tova, as children of others who were not thankful. D'chsev ha'isha asher nasata imadi. As the Pasuk says, Adam HaRishon said, it was the woman who you gave me, he nasna li min ha'itzvocha. She was the one who gave me the forbidden fruit. So in other words, the Gemara faults Adam for this statement, in effect demonstrating ingratitude to Hashem who provided him a wife. So in the context of this very first sin, we find, actually in various ways, we find ingratitude. And this phrase, B'nei Ha'adam, became something of a shorthand, almost code, for those lacking this midah. Not only were the Jewish people in the Midbar referred to as children of Adam HaRishon in their ingratitude, but in the subsequent Parsha of Noach, the Dor HaFlaga, the generation of the dispersion, is also referred to as B'nai HaAdam shortly before they're punished for rebelliously building their tower. If we take a look at Source 26, Asher Banu B'nai HaAdam, that's a quote from the Perek in reference to those who were building the Migdal Bavel. Omar Rav Brechia v'chima nomar b'nei Chamraya o b'nei Gamlaya? What would I have said? Obviously, these are children of man. Why point out that those building the tower were children of man? What, were they children of donkeys and camels? Of course not. Ella, and there's a typo there, Ella Bonov, the Adam Kadma'a. They are children of the first man, Adam Harishon. Ma Adam Harishon, achar kala tova she'asisi imo. After all the good, and now it's Hashem speaking, that I did for Adam, Omar, he said to me, ha'isha she'nasata imadi. Adam turns to Hashem and says, look, it's in a sense your fault. It was the woman you gave me that led me to this sin. Kach shnasayim midor ha'mabol ador ha'flaga. Shortly afterwards, we find vayihi kol ha'aretz safa echas, etc., etc. Shortly afterwards, we find the dor ha'flaga that are two acting rebelliously. They should have been appreciative to Hashem who saved them and their ancestors and their descendants from the great flood, from the dor ha'mabol, and yet they too followed in this same unfortunate path of ingratitude. As another example in Vayera, recall that Lot requests of the Malachim that they spare the city of Tzoar. At that point, Lot believes he'll make Tzoar his new home. Remarkably, the angel replies in the affirmative that the city will not be destroyed on Lot's say-so. To what did Lot owe this extraordinary influence? The Medrash explains that the angel agreed because he owed Lot a debt of gratitude for hosting them, as in Source 27, Uma im Lot al yidei shekibed es hamalach nosa lo ponim. Lot, because of the fact that he hosted the malach, therefore the malach agreed to his request. The rest of the phrase is relevant to the point the Medrash there is making, but not to us directly. So we find again the point that Chazal are bringing out of gratitude. And I wanted to give an example as well from Yaakov Avinu, whom we've been reading about these last weeks. When he arrived in Shechem, the Pasuk relates, Vayichan es p'nei ha'ir. He camped the front of the city. What exactly was Yaakov doing at the entrance to the city? Says the Medrash, Vayichan es p'nei ha'ir, Hischil ma'amid hatlisin u'mocher bezol. He sold low-priced goods at the gate of the city. Hada amrit shadam tzarech lahachzik tova. From here we see a person has to show gratitude. L'makom sheyesh lo hanam imenu. They allowed the local population, allowed him an area to lodge. He benefited from them, and therefore he, in gratitude, benefited them in return. Interestingly, the Medrash even prescribes expression of gratitude regardless of the intention of the giver. For example, despising or rejecting Egyptians is prohibited, despite the fact that they enslaved, oppressed, murdered the Jews, as we read in this week's Sedra. Unlike members of some nations whose descendants may never marry into our people, even if they convert, third-generation descendants of Egyptian Gerim are welcomed into the Jewish people because they welcomed us, because the Egyptians deserve some measure of gratitude for initially hosting the Jews in their land, even if their hospitality hardly seemed born of selfless altruism. Take a look at Source 29. Lo sisaev mitzri, we cannot reject the Mitzrim, mikol v'chol completely, afal pisha zarku zichurechem lior, even though they threw our children into the waters. Matam, shahayu lachem achsanya b'shas hadchak. When Yaakov and his family needed a place to live and to be supported, it was the Egyptians, and therefore we owe them a debt of gratitude. Now, some may doubt the value of gratitude toward an inanimate object like water or sand, as we found Moshe displaying during the Makos of Dam, Tzvardeya, and Kinim, as we discussed at the beginning of the shir, or toward a benefactor like the Egyptians with questionable intentions, as we just now mentioned. But based on the words of Rav Dessler and Michtav Meliyahu, we may suggest that the goal is to encourage an overall personality that exudes gratitude through exercises of thanksgiving wherever and whenever they may be applied. But I believe there's more to this story. The villain of the Pesach story of much of Sefer Shemos is, of course, Paro. And he provides a perfect foil to the gratitude displayed by the hero, so to speak, Moshe Rabbeinu, whom we already established as a model of Hakaras HaTov based on his treatment of the Ur, of the desert sands, even of the wicked Midyanim later on. By contrast, Paro is condemned as ungrateful by the Medrash for persecuting and enslaving the family and descendants of Yosef. Yosef, his viceroy, who dealt kindly with Egypt, implementing an economic plan that saved his country from famine and ruin. Let's take a look at source 30. Vayakam melech hadash, a new king arises. Kolomar vayakam melech Mitzrayim l'chadesh gzeirosav al Mitzrayim. A new king, or at least a king in a sense, who is offering new decrees, unfortunately, on Egypt. Asher lo yada es Yosef, he didn't know Yosef. Kolomar haya kafui tova. He was ungrateful towards Yosef. Ki'ilu lo hikar es Yosef. Perhaps he knew very well Yosef, or at least the tradition of the good that Yosef did, but he ignored it. V'shochach es kol chasadav shehevi es kol hakesef beis of Paro. Who's the one, as we just read the other week, who collected all the monies and actually brought them directly to Paro? V'kana osam yesad masam leParo. He was the one responsible for bringing all of the lands and all of the people to Paro as slaves of Paro, belonging to Paro. The Achshav Kofaru Bogadbo, and now Paro denies him, revolts against Yosef, so to speak. Ukshem Shekofar B'Yosef, just as he denies the good that Yosef did, Kach Kofar B'Boro, so too Paro denies his creator. Shahari Omerlo Yosef, what did Yosef say? Es Asher Ho'elokim Oseh Ha'era Es Paro. Yosef reminded Paro that in interpreting his dreams, it isn't just him personally, but it is Hashem who is revealing through the dreams his plans to Paro. So in other words, Yosef made sure to explain that it was Hashem's hand here. V'hu Omar, but nevertheless, what does Paro say? In Shmos, lo yadati Hashem. I don't know God. And here we hear echoes of the Sefer Achinuch, right? That one who is grateful towards other human beings, in that context, mother and father, he'll be brought, as we said, to gratitude towards Hashem. Here we see the opposite, that Paro, who dismisses gratitude towards Yosef, towards the people of Yosef, human beings after all, he in the end denies the gratitude that he owes towards Hashem. Arurin hein harishoyin, the Medrash concludes, Jehain kafuye tova. What does it mean to be a Rasha? Cursed are the Rishayim because they deny the good that's done for them. Kofrim mishu osei imayim tova. Nonetheless, as we said, we are not to go down to Paro's level, but rather are nonetheless taught to show his people some measure of gratitude. So the events of Yitzias Mitzrayim, which gave birth to the Jewish people, redemption from the Kura Barzel, the iron furnace that forged Klal Yisrael, based on these and also other sources, Yitzias Mitzrayim is a story that prominently carries the theme of Hakaras HaTov, the birth of our nation, from this event that has within it so many times these themes of Hakaras HaTov. Interestingly, in contrast to the Mitzrim, who the Torah, on account of gratitude, requires us to allow into the Jewish people, are the Ammonim and Moavim. These are the nations referred to earlier that we may never permit to marry into the Jewish people, even if they convert, and no matter how many generations have passed. And why is this? Source 31, Lo Yavo Ammoni Umoavi Bekal Hashem. Gamdor Asiri Lo Yavo Lahem Bekal Hashem Arolam. Members of these nations are not allowed into our people, even 10th generation converts, not allowed. Al Devar Asher Lo Kidmu Eschem Balechem Uvamayim. Because they did not come to offer food and water as we were leaving Egypt. And also they were the ones who hired Bilam to curse our people. The Ramban elaborates in the following source. Why is it that the Pasuk distances these two achim, meaning the fathers of Ammon and Moab, right? The peoples of Ammon and Moab, their ancestors were brothers after all. Why is it that they are pushed away from our people? Says the Ramban, Shahayu gemule chesed me Avraham, because they were benefited from Avraham. Shehitzel aviyam b'ima min acherev v'hashvi. When Lot was captured, the war of the four kings and the five kings, it was Abraham who rescued them from captivity. Ubizchuso shilcham Hashem mitoch afecha. And it was on account of Abraham, later, that Lot and his daughters, who were the ancestors of the peoples of Ammon and Moab, were sent forth from the conflagration that was the destruction of Sodom and Amorah. Therefore, they should have been grateful, and yet they weren't. They returned this good with evil. And that's why we're not allowed to allow them into our people. And Rav Elio Lapian explains that banning Ammon and Moab from our nation was not necessarily about punishing them. Rather, it's simply an issue of identity. As we explain, the very essence of what it means to be a Jew is based on Hakaras HaTov, gratitude. Those who lack this trait, Ammon and Moab, simply don't find their place in Klal Yisrael. And these are but a few examples. But as we move from these mostly early Agadic examples to those from writings of the later philosophers, we see this idea again, and perhaps even more clearly. Medieval Jewish thinkers as well suggest that Hakaras HaTov is the primary basic principle of all. Gratitude is not merely relevant to various individual mitzvos, like Kibud Horim and the Karban Todah and Bikurim. Rather, it underlies, it is the foundation of all of the Torah's commandments. Rav Yosef ibn Tzadik was a philosopher and contemporary of Yehuda Halevi. The Rambam, another contemporary, wrote highly of him, and the Radak as well, quotes Rav Yosef ibn Tzadik. His Sefer HaOlam HaKatan was intended to explain how man should pursue the everlasting good and the state of perfection. And in this work, Rabbi Yosef explains that Brias HaOlam, creation, occurred because of Hashem's abundant goodness and mercy and nothing else. Not recognizing this goodness of Hashem, therefore, is the equivalent of denying him. Gratitude, he writes, is our most basic duty to Hashem, our primary religious responsibility. Beinu Bachya says similarly, and as we approach these parshios of Shibud Mitzrayim and Gulas Mitzrayim, I prefer to cite the Ibn Ezra. The Avram Ibn Ezra writes that the Torah obligates Jews to perform more mitzvos than Gentiles because we, redeemed from slavery in Egypt, owe a larger debt of gratitude to Hashem. After all, he says, this is the meaning of the end of Devarim Perek Vav, where the famous question cited in the Haggadah is recorded. Ki yishalcha bincha machar, when your children one day will ask you, Lemor maha edos v'hachukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu estem. What are all these mitzvos that you do? Says the Ibn Ezra, what's really being asked, and let's take a look at source 33, Moshe appears there by Parshas Ki Yishalcha Bincha. This is what Moshe is talking about in that Parsha, in reference to the son who asks us, what are these mitzvos? Ki Tam HaSheela, the reasoning behind the child's question. Lama Anu Chayavim Lasos Mitzvos Hashem Yoser Mikol Adam? Why is it that we have to do mitzvos more than others do? Halo Borei Echad Lekulanu? Aren't we all Jews and others alike? Product of the same creator. Vinei hizgir shalosh tshuvos. What's the first though? What is the first of the three answers that Moshe provides? Ha'alef avadim hayinu leparo. V'hu asalanu zos hatova hagdola. We were slaves to Paro, and God did us this tremendous goodness in redeeming us. Al kein anu chayavim lishmor kol mashi yitzavenu. Therefore, we have to follow his words, afilu lo hayinu yodim tam mitzvos. Even if we don't understand, we have to follow him for this reason and gratitude. So mitzvah fulfillment in general, then, the Ibn Ezra is telling us, is as at its root due to gratitude. In fact, in Judaism, various forms of gratitude rituals are mandated throughout the day. The very first words uttered immediately upon waking each morning, Moda Ani, express gratitude to Hashem for the gift of another day of life. And the many subsequent morning blessings thank Hashem for such basic and often overlooked endowments as the ability to see and to stand upright. At the end of Shmoneh Esrei, three times each day, we recite Modim to thank Hashem for all He provides. The brachos before we eat and the Birchas HaMazon afterwards. Perhaps the most common bracha we say throughout the day also carries this theme, Asher Yatzar, communicating gratitude for our bodily functions. So these collective blessings and prayers attune awareness to Hashem's beneficence and the gratitude thus due Him. So gratitude may be a religious imperative. It may even be a central and underlying theme of the entire Jewish religion. But what makes it so attractive to social scientists? What has 21st century psychology research found that makes this trait so compelling? To me, the most exciting findings are those that connect gratitude with well-being. That those expressing the midah of hakaras hatov, aside from being better Jews, indeed better people, may experience better health and well-being. Let's discuss a few examples together. And by the way, you're about to see how positive psychology is different from various humanistic perspectives that have long been known to social scientists. The new science of positive psychology is rigorously committed to empirical investigation. In layman's term, this ain't fluffy stuff. If a genuine positive psychologist tells you that gratitude is linked to better health, it means there's numbers behind that claim. It means we've got hard data that shows it so. So first, in a general way, studies show that those who are more grateful report more life satisfaction and more positive emotion. Not only proper research studies, but even Gallup polling data, 90% of American teens and adults tell us that expressing gratitude made them somewhat or extremely happy. But psychologists have also looked at its relationship to mental illness. You ready for this? There's data to suggest that gratitude is significantly associated with stronger interpersonal relationships, lower risk of depression, lower risk of stress, anxiety, phobias, nicotine dependence, alcohol dependence, even less drug abuse. Thankfulness was even related to a much lower risk of bulimia. That's right. There's clear data that when we intervene to increase gratitude, people's body image improves. Now, I know what some of you, at least some of you, are thinking. The old adage, correlation is not causation. Maybe this data is merely correlational. Even if we find that gratitude is associated with good health, who says a grateful disposition or expressions of gratitude lead to better health? Maybe the kinds of people reporting more thankfulness were already the kinds of people who smoke and drink less, who were less depressed and less anxious. Maybe those with better health have more to be thankful for, and well-being causes gratitude and not the other way around. The simplest answer to that question is that at least a portion of gratitude research goes far beyond the correlational. The best way to infer causation, the true gold standard, is the randomized experiment. If we randomly divide people into two groups, and those in the first group are asked to express gratitude, and those in the second group are not, and only those who express gratitude tell us they feel happier, well, now you're getting somewhere. You can't argue that all those in the gratitude group were happier people to begin with, because after all, we put them there and the groups were determined randomly. And that brings us to the research area that I personally find most fascinating, the intervention research. On the one hand, the intervention research we'll discuss goes beyond the correlational, showing us the benefits that gratitude causes and how we can bring those about. But also on a personal note, it demonstrates practical ways that you and I can bring these messages into our own lives. After all, up to this point you may be thinking, all right, you convinced me. Judaism values, perhaps is even founded upon gratitude. And psychologists too agree that gratitude is key to health and happiness. But how exactly do I get there? What now? Right, tell me what I have to do. The classic gratitude intervention involves what are called gratitude lists. Participants may be asked to keep a diary. Perhaps each night before bed they list, say, five things they're grateful for. For example, as we mentioned, when people with body satisfaction dissatisfaction carry out this sort of exercise for just 2 weeks, their body image improves compared with those who don't. When those who suffer from worry and anxiety make gratitude lists, they see large decreases in worry. And here's the kicker. Not only do gratitude lists lead to big improvements, These improvements aren't only relative to controls, to those who did nothing at all to treat their symptoms. The benefits seen from making gratitude lists, the benefits to those suffering from worry or struggling with body dissatisfaction, were as big as those benefits brought about by well-known clinical psychology techniques. In other words, cognitive behavioral clinical psychology methods of treating body dissatisfaction, of combating worry, and these are very effective, mind you. Well, startlingly, gratitude lists are equally effective. And some have argued that they may shape up to be even more effective than traditional treatments because people say they enjoy making the gratitude lists. People don't always enjoy the work of therapy, but this they do enjoy. So they're less likely to drop out because they like it. People will do it, so not only does it work, it keeps working. When I think about gratitude lists, I wonder at the fact that Chazal already incorporated these into every day of our lives. Let's take a closer look at a few of the Jewish practices we briefly mentioned a few moments ago. Consider, for example, the long list in Benching's second paragraph, Nodelecha. We thank you, Hashem, for the land of Israel, for redemption, for the covenant, for the Torah, for the mitzvos, for life, for your kindnesses, for our food and sustenance. A gratitude list, if I ever saw one. Think of the bracha in the Amidah, three times a day. Modim anachnu lach, we thank you, Hashem, for our lives, for our souls, for your miracles each and every day, morning, noon, and night, for your compassion, for your kindnesses. Another gratitude list. My favorite example, though, is from yesterday's Shabbos davening from Nishmas. We list so much that Hashem does and has done for us, for our ancestors, redemption, nourishing and sustaining us, saving us from illness and disease, from war, for his constant support and attention, l'chol avad anachnu moldim, to you alone we give thanks. And then my favorite line abridged, were our mouth as full of song as the sea and our tongue as full of joyous praise as the breath of the heavens, we still could not thank you sufficiently, Hashem, for even one of the thousands of myriads favors that you perform for us. So we already have our gratitude lists. And what about for young people? In many of our communities, we've lately been talking a lot about at-risk kids, those of our youth experiencing emotional, academic, and/or religious difficulties. At least part of the answer may not be as complex as some believe. Researchers had some children aged 11 to 14 list five things for which they were grateful, and they did this for 2 weeks. Compared with other kids, those making the gratitude lists reported more satisfaction with school. That is, they said they find school more interesting, feel good at school, think they're learning a lot. They said they were more eager to go to school. Now, aside from being important in their own right, these so-called school satisfaction factors are known to relate to social success and to academic success. And let me emphasize, this success wasn't some fleeting thing. When the researchers came back several weeks later, after the gratitude lists were long finished, they found the effects had lasted. Who would have thought? Assign our teens gratitude lists. Let's take another example, a different form of intervention. Not the gratitude list, but the gratitude visit. In this study, a group of middle-aged adults, and they came upon the study by way of the internet, were assigned to write a letter thanking someone who had benefited them, and to deliver it to the benefactor later that week. Compared with controls, those who made this gratitude visit reported more happiness. But once again, it wasn't fleeting. A month after the study, those who had written the gratitude letter, who had made this gratitude visit, were still happier than others. Imagine if we had a pill that would make people happier, that would improve body image, that would silence excessive worry, that would help our kids succeed at school, academically and socially. And the pill costs next to nothing and seemingly had no side effects. Wouldn't we all line up for a double dose? But why does it work? Why might gratitude be such a powerful indicator and predictor of health, an effective means of treating psychological symptoms? Among the various benefits of gratitude interventions are that they help one to sleep at night. Literally. When people were assigned to make gratitude lists, and this study included a large proportion of participants with real sleep disorders, those who made the gratitude lists fell asleep more quickly, they slept longer and better, and functioned better the next day compared with those who did not do the gratitude exercise. What researchers found was that people may have upsetting thoughts before they go to bed, and these are linked to sleep problems. But those who made gratitude lists were less likely to have these negative cognitions. In simple words, they were more likely to think happy thoughts. And yeah, to sleep better. Gratitude encourages positive cognitions, happy thoughts, and complementary positive emotions. Gratitude discourages stress and stressful thoughts, and corresponding negative emotions. We have then a possible window into just how gratitude may be linked with so many of the other benefits we described beyond sleep improvement. It's well known via a host of other studies that positive and negative thoughts and emotions are tightly related to health, especially mental health. Not unrelatedly, others have suggested that gratitude perhaps changes the way we view our world, maybe the way we cope with our daily lives. Grateful people view others' intentions as more altruistic rather than cynically or selfishly motivated. Grateful people make more use of social support. They're more likely to deal with challenges rather than coping with them by ignoring them or turning to substance use to bury their problems. Anyone can benefit from these interventions. But one last point. New research suggests that we religious folk may have a leg up on others. Positive psychologists differentiate between interpersonal gratitude, thankfulness towards another person, and transpersonal gratitude, thankfulness to God. Now, as we've described already, Judaism incorporates both forms, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, Bein Adam L'Makom. But research suggests that those who express religious gratitude or gratitude to God may experience extra benefit in terms of psychological health and well-being versus those who only experience other gratitude, typically interpersonal gratitude. Let me explain. If a person receives a gift of $20 from a friend, he may feel thankful. He may feel interpersonal gratitude towards that friend. But what if he instead found $20 on the street? A completely secular person, while he may be glad to have some extra cash, would have no reason to feel gratitude. After all, there's nobody to feel thankful toward. Nobody was trying to help him. In his mind, he just got lucky. A religious person, on the other hand, who is privy to transpersonal gratitude, a religious person can always feel thankful to God for his gift, for this good fortune. Potentially, there is no limit to the frequency and intensity of gratitude that a God-believing person may experience. No person need do anything for him, and yet he can still feel grateful, grateful for his health, grateful for his life. Each and every moment he can, perhaps should, feel grateful to God for every breath he takes. As religious people, and as Jews especially, gratitude has always been a defining trait. And now we're learning just how beneficial it is, just how easy it is to encourage in ourselves and in our children. And now it's time for me to be grateful. In conclusion, at this juncture, it's now that much more meaningful and appropriate for me to thank again our hosts, Yeshiva University and the Arbisfeld family and the Center for the Jewish Future for sponsoring this morning's program, and to thank all of you for coming. Thank you for this opportunity. I see that there are questions. Are there? No?
Yeah, you could.
I think
we're gonna stop.
Okay, so we'll adjourn and then I can stay around for those who have the questions private. This is why I said.